Hi, and welcome to A Palace for the People. I am Wanjiro Koinange.
And I am Angela Washuka. Each episode on this podcast, we go deep into a slice of Kenyan history, inspired by items we found within the library archives. Today, Shiro, what are we learning about in today's episode?
Girl, wait for it. I have such a dramatic intro planned. Okay, so are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so Washuka, when I say the words, theft. Ring of deception.
That's a phrase.
Okay. If you're going to get technical, work with me here.
Okay.
Mafia cartel.
Uh-huh.
Cheat. What comes to mind?
Definitely something like narcos.
Narcos, drugs.
Yes.
That's what comes to mind.
Mafia cartel.
Okay, no, nope. Not drugs or narcos. Today, we are talking about education.
How now?
Uh-huh, education.
Okay. Let's talk about it.
The Kenya Certificate of Secondary Examinations, KCSC papers, are being sold for as little as 500 shillings. Police investigations have revealed
cyber and digital forensics experts are analyzing all the subscribers in the WhatsApp and Telegram groups involved in the examination.
The Ministry of Education has once again sounded a warning bell to those planning to engage in examination malpractice that they shall be met with the full force of the law.
So this issue of exam cheating has been an ongoing challenge over the last few decades. And even as recently as 2022, the Kenyan Minister for Interior was talking about bringing in the military.
The what now?
The military. Because teachers have been supporting these rings of cartel that help students to cheat in their exams.
But still, that's madness. We're talking about exams here.
Yeah.
Even thinking about exams though, Shiro, like my pulse just...
I know, right?
Yeah.
And you are not the only one. I was reading the other day that apparently dreams about academic anxiety are the most common dreams globally, across cultures, across ages. The nightmare of turning up into an exam room and you haven't studied.
It sounds super familiar.
Right? Actually. Or you're just in the wrong exam room altogether. I've had a few of those.
Yep.
So, to prepare for this episode, I have here an exam.
No, where did you get that?
The internet.
Okay. It's comprehension. Oh no, it's not. It's maths, which is not my favorite subject. All right, here we go. Do you think you can do it? Listeners at home, ready your papers. So, Mr. Owino spends a quarter of his salary on school fees. He spends two-thirds of the remainder on food, and a fifth of that he spends on transport. He saves the balance. In certain months, he saves 3,400 shillings. What was his salary?
Oh, like you want me to do it?
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, I wasn't ready. I just downloaded the exam. I didn't prepare. This is very triggering for somebody who got D's and E's in math. Okay. Let me try.
Okay, give it a try.
I don't know if this podcast is long enough for me to do this. Carry two. No. Is this the answer?
No, Shiro. No. Epic fail. It is not. The answer is 17,000.
I'm so triggered. But how did the stakes of education in Kenya get so high? I mean, is an education just what a society considers knowledge worth passing on from generation to generation?
But it's also, and this is where exam pressure comes in, the idea of qualifying, of certifying, of getting a certificate or a diploma or some kind of degree or accolade that proves you know the thing you've spent however many years getting to know.
Exactly, yes. And all over the world, not just here in Kenya, the pressure to get that paper has led to all manner of chaos.
The bust is called Operation Varsity Blues, and the accusations range from paying thousands of dollars
for the massive sting exposing the ugly truth that admission to college can be bought.
The largest ever college admissions cheating scam.
The FBI uncovered what we believe is a rigged system.
States wiretaps, a year-long sting. This morning, 50 people arrested.
Exams are just one of the things that come under scrutiny in the 844 curriculum. And if you are a certain age today and went to school in Kenya, odds are the curriculum you studied was 844. The same 844 that was born in the 1980s and that's being phased out right now. So, as we close the door on this story of 844, it just makes me wonder, what are we losing? And what are we so happy to say kwaheri to? The 844 curriculum began in the 1980s, and it stands for...
I should know this. I was born in the 1980s. 844 and I were born in the same decade. Stands for 8 years of primary, uh-huh. 4 years of secondary, uh-huh. and 4 years of university.
Correct. So to understand the merits, it's important to go right back to the beginning and understand the problem that 844 was trying to solve in the first place. What exactly existed for Kenyans before 844? And what are we even talking about when we talk about getting an education?
Education before the colonialists came was basically the system by which societies passed on their values to the next generation and also prepared them for work that they would do as adults.
This is Dr. Wandia Njoya. She teaches at Daystar University here in Kenya, and she has become a public voice on education and educational reform.
So the African societies were concerned about people knowing their history, where they came from, knowing their environment. African education also had a very strong connection to the ancestors and to the supernatural world. Then you also have the apprenticeships like medicine, midwifery, blacksmithing, which you learned with a master over a long period of time. So it was not like today where you go to school for a few years, get a certificate.
There were these learning centers where people from different communities would come to find out how other people were doing things. They could technically be considered the libraries or universities of the time. These centers were part of the fabric of an African education before colonization.
And with almost all things to do with life, when colonialism came, things took a turn.
So there was pressure on the colonial government to provide education for the settlers' families. And then also there was the Asians who had come to Kenya to build the railway. They too said, we also want education. And then also the colony was fairly expensive to run. They could not afford to run it on only civil servants brought from the UK. So they needed to train a few civil servants who would do the clerical work. And so they now started taking a few Africans to school. The other thing that they had an interest in was forming a Kenyan ruling class. And that ruling class would have the values and ideas of the colonialists.
This very small Black Kenyan elite was formed under colonialism with access to missionary schools and the colonial education system. But these schools, like many things under colonial rule, were still segregated. So there were schools for white students, schools for mostly Asian students, and schools for, again, a very small number of Black students. So, with Kenya's independence in 1963, came a moment to make some changes.
Mjue kwamba mna kazi muhimu sana ya kuwaelimisha watoto wetu. Na kwa hivyo, tukishirikiana pamoja na raia na serikali, tutakuwa na kazi njema.
That's our first president, Jomo Kenyatta, pledging to make a bunch of educational reforms. So in 1964 and 65, an extensive report called the Ominde Commission was published. In it, 160 reforms to Kenya's education were proposed. For example, the British Cambridge Exam Board now became the East African Examination Board.
Mm.
So in theory, this board now held East African education to an East African standard rather than a European one. Schools with foreign names were now given local names. You must know Lenana High School.
Yes, changes.
Mm-hmm. Changes. Could you guess what it used to be called?
Duke of somewhere.
Duke of somewhere that isn't here. Correct. Duke of York is what it used to be called.
What about the Duke of Murang'a Shire?
Right? What about Upper Hill? Upper Hill Secondary?
That one I know. That one was called Delamere?
Delamere High School. Delamere exactly. High School. And it was named after the prolific colonist, Lord Delamere. I don't know why we'd want to do that. But I'm kind of especially grateful for this name change, Jamhuri High School.
Jamu!
It was also named Duke of somewhere that isn't here, mm-hmm. but this one was Duke of Gloucester.
Duke of Gloucester, gotcha.
Yeah. There were some other changes as well. The government gave African students bursaries to enable them to attend schools that were previously all white or all Asian. It was basically an attempt to stop exclusive, racially segregated education.
Now that the British government was leaving, there were so many positions that needed to be taken over by Africans. The Ominde Commission was basically to say, now that we are independent, how do we have a coherent education system that provides education to all Kenyans?
Jomo Kenyatta's government gave a facelift to Kenya's education system, which in the late 1970s was called the 7-4-2-3 system. It looked black, but in many fundamental ways, opportunities for the majority of Kenyans were still limited. All this would change with the next government.
Mimi, Daniel Doroitich Arap Moi, naapa kwamba nitakuwa mwaminifu kwa jamhuri ya Kenya.
844 arrived in 1985 under a new government, that of President Moi. At the time, it promised to give more Kenyan children access to education at every level. So the previous system required students to finish Form 4 and then go on to study for 2 more years, which is their A-levels, and then go on to university. But not many secondary schools offered those last 2 years.
So it was a very competitive, I think very unequal system, and that it favored the schools which were already built, especially by missionaries or built for the settlers. So, you know, the Kenya Highs, the Lenanas, the Alliances, which already had A-levels.
But when Moi comes to power in the 1980s, things turn around. You no longer have to do your A-levels in order to get into university.
Most of these high schools where kids have access to A-levels and university are along the railway between Kiambu and Nyanza. So he comes from an area farther from the railway, so to speak, where kids don't have that kind of access. So he wanted to make a system where more children from these other areas are able to go to university.
Another idea was to extend primary school by 1 year.
The 844 was designed so that if kids are not able to move on to secondary school, you've come out older and with more skills.
Many of the decision makers, parents, people reacting and responding to critiques of the 844 curriculum know it from experiencing it. I went through it, and it's really hard for me to look at the system that shaped me dispassionately. But in the past 5 years, Kenya has taken a long critical look at the 844 system to see if it can come up with something better.
The 844 system will not be there forever because times are changing and it needs to change with time.
We are also aware that the kind of education that is being offered in the country currently is relevant.
But the Minister of Education and the teachers' union leaders are finally on the same page. The two have finally agreed on the rollout of phase 2 of the piloting for the new school curriculum nationally.
Kenya began a critical review of the 844 system 5 years ago, which brings us to where we are today. There's a new curriculum in town. And it goes by the name of CBC, the competency-based curriculum. So with CBC, instead of doing one big final exam that makes or breaks your entire academic career, you are assessed throughout your school year.
In 844, we were more focused on to the learners acquiring the knowledge through whichever means that we would get, whether it is through memorizing, whether it is through games, whether it is through mimics, whatever the way that we had to use, we had to get to make the learners memorize. And you know very well that whatever that the learners will just memorize, they will forget.
This is Jean Washira. She's the head teacher of McKinney Upper Primary. McKinney was founded in 1978 as an alternative to government schools while still following the Kenyan education system. McKinney is one of the private schools that the Kenyan government piloted the transition from 844 to CBC.
In CBC, the focus is more on the competencies that these learners are going to get. Critical thinkers. In 844, we are not giving the learners the problems to solve, but we are just giving them the solutions because we want them to cram as much as they can in order to pass the exams, because the key thing was to pass the exams.
There are still exams in the CBC, but you also accumulate a portfolio of work and projects that contribute to your assessment, your continuous assessment. So it's less about memorizing and regurgitating information and more about each student being measured against the milestones expected of their age and of their learning level. All that stuff that we talked about at the top, the exam stress, the immense pressure on kids, that was supposed to be something that was solved, at least a little bit, by CBC. But not everybody thinks it does that. Back to Dr. Wandia Njoya. For her, unless there's more opportunities for students graduating from secondary and university, the problem with exam obsession will remain.
This mess of exams, let's start with 844. We were just as exam obsessed as in the old system. We were just as exam obsessed as the next system. So what happened with 844 was the economic pressure, because now there was the new generation of kids who had been born post-independence. They were now becoming adults with their own children, and these children had to enter an economy that was not expanding. So the papers became more and more important to get the fewer and fewer spaces. Exam obsession comes from politics. It doesn't come from the content of the curriculum.
But also, Shiro, how else is this CBC that different from 844, really?
Okay, so kids start school 2 years earlier, at 4 years old, mm-hmm. with 2 years of preschool. Then the breakdown of years has changed from the very nifty and easy to say 844, kind of has a ring to it, right?
It does.
But now it's kind of like impossible to remember. So now it's 26333.
26333.
And as an attempt to give a more holistic education to students, there's also a push to involve parents in the process of their kids' education.
And I was saying earlier how we know what parents think about that. So many of them have been sharing on social media, and specifically like hashtags on Twitter.
Yeah.
How this has been such a big pain point.
It really, truly has. And this shift from 844 to CBC hasn't only met retraining teachers, schools, education boards, and examiners, but also the entire ecosystem around the students and their parents.
Oh, students. By the way, now they go by the term learners.
Indeed, they do. You can't be calling them students anymore.
Mm-mm.
They're now learners. It's a destabilizing process in general, and it's unsurprising that this would be met with such resistance from parents and educators like Dr. Njoya.
Every time there are contradictions in the economy and the education system, the government has to show that it is doing something, and so it comes up with reform. But you see, they are not really reforming. They keep bringing this very PR kind of language to cheat us that they are making some fundamental changes, but nothing has fundamentally changed in the way we think about education and in the way our education relates to the economy.
And reform, it's not quite over. Here is the newly elected President Ruto in 2022.
There is a robust conversation, ladies and gentlemen, in the country on education, and in particular, the implementation of CBC curriculum. Public participation is critical in this matter. I will establish an education reform task force in the presidency.
The task force has come back with some preliminary findings, and no surprises here, parents and stakeholders are rather disgruntled.
Mm.
So Ruto is already taking measures to make his own changes.
What do these changes look like?
Mm-hmm. So, do you remember 844?
Yes.
8 years in primary, 4 in secondary, 4 in university, and now we have 2 years of preschool,
right?
6 of primary.
Right.
3 years of what is called junior school.
Junior school stop is 3 years?
Let's stop there.
Okay.
So, the biggest change to this proposal is for junior secondary schools, that is grades 7, 8, and 9, to no longer be housed in secondary schools, but to be put in expanded primary schools.
Okay.
This is so that kids don't have to travel very far away when they finish primary school in order to access secondary school, or rather now it's called junior secondary school.
Junior secondary school. So, when you're in junior secondary school, you are housed within the primary school.
Exactly.
That is a proposal. As opposed to the secondary school.
That is a proposal.
Okay.
They just get that education from the same place.
So I guess the question would be, the existing primary schools, are they equipped to handle this junior secondary schooling?
And that is the main question, and most of them aren't. But his proposal would see the building of new labs and new classrooms. And that's just one change. There are more changes expected to be announced later this year, 2023.
Right.
I guess the ultimate question is, do any of these reforms fundamentally change the education on offer for Kenyan children today? Or is this change actually taking Kenya back in time?
When I started talking about CBC, one of the things that surprised me was when they talked about we need people to do technical skills and not have knowledge. That's the same thing Lord Lugard was saying about Africans. I mean, come on. How can we be repeating the same formulas that Africans are too stupid, their brains stop maturing at 13, so they can't deal with ideas, they have no arts worth speaking of. That's what they were saying 80 years ago as a reason for not allowing us to have the arts in our schools. Now they are telling us it's for jobs, nobody wants jobs. That's what the settlers were saying. I mean, I just... And these are the things that always surprise me, because how are we repeating the same narratives of the colonialists and calling that education reform? There's nothing fundamentally that has changed.
There's two ways to look at the end of it for four and the transition into CBC. One, embrace the unknown.
I think as citizens, we are not giving it time. There has to be a few hiccups here and there, especially with the first group, until now we settle. So I think the thing that I strongly feel that the public needs to know is that we give time.
The other way to look at this is not to place all our educating eggs in one basket by leaving it all to the government in the first place. If we want to give our kids a holistic education, maybe we have to source our education from the community.
Mm. I think schools cannot be the center of knowledge. I think because they are flawed, and now we can't afford to give the kind of education we want to every child, at least not with the economy that we have. So we need to expand our ideas of education and allow alternative forms of knowledge. Knowledge that comes from work, from expertise, from experience, from centers of knowledge like libraries, cultural centers, sports arenas, gatherings of people, parks, you know, all these other public spaces are also centers of knowledge. And knowledge is not just about, do I know the chemical formula for ABCD? Even knowing each other, knowing each other's histories, learning to relate to one another as human beings, that's part of knowledge.
At the Eastlands Library, we have anywhere between 60 and 600 students, learners, using the space each single day.
Exactly. If we expand the value of libraries, also known in our world as palaces for the people, as well as public spaces and other sites for knowledge, then maybe, just maybe, kids and teachers will have time and space to bring more of themselves into the classroom. More options outside the pressure for good grades and the pressure to pass exams. And then maybe more people will have access to knowledge and learning and fun. Special thanks to Katia Nyangi for sharing her research on McKinney School's institutional history. Just a note, we recorded this episode in early January 2023, and this is an ongoing story. This is A Palace for the People. I am Anjiro Koinange.
And I am Angela Washuka. This episode was produced by me, Angela Washuka, Wanjiro Koinange, Maeve Francis, and Ida Holinambi. This has been a Fathom Sirens production. You can learn more about our work at bookbank.org.
This podcast is supported by the Cultural Protection Fund, which is a partnership between the British Council and the UK Government's Department for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport. Thank you for listening.